man of virtue, man of makarimul akhlaq, man of freedom, and help him and support him and follow what? Follow the book which has been sent with him, the Quran, which is light. Wattaba'un nur. This Quran is light. These are the people who are happy. These are the people who have had falah and salvation. May Allah inshallah include us among them. So ma'ruf is something which is good, which is right, which is supposed to be done, and munkar is opposite. Of course, after you receive guidance from Islam, after you are introduced to Sharia, you can have much more elaborate account and understanding of ma'ruf. You can have a detailed account of ma'ruf and munkar from Sharia. That helps us to refine and get more accurate understanding of Sharia. So now I want to refer to the section on Amr al-Ma'ruf wa Nahy al-Munkar in the manual. All our maraja have this in their Risale, and but this is according to Ayatollah Sistani, Hafazahullah. So he starts with an introduction. And he says, Amr al-Ma'ruf wa Nahy al-Munkar are two of the greatest obligations. Two of the greatest religious obligations. Then he refers to the ayah that we discussed, وَلْتَكُنْ مِنْكُمْ أُمَّةٌ يَدْعُونَ إِلَّا الْخَيْرِ وَيَعْمُرُونَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَيَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. Then he quotes a hadith from Rasulullah. You know, when a marja quotes a hadith, it's very important. It means that this hadith is 100% verified by marja. لا تزال أمتي بخير ما أمروا بالمعروف ونهوا عن المنكر وتعاونوا على البر. Rasulullah said, my community, my nation will be always in right condition as long as they do Amr al-Ma'ruf and they prohibit Munkar and help each other to do good. تعاونوا على البر. They help each other, they assist each other for doing good. فَإِذَا لَمْ يَفْعَلُوا ذَلِكَ. If they don't do this, نُزِعَتْ عَنْهُمُ الْبَرَكَاتِ. Allah will take away His blessing. Then you would see there would be poverty. There would be so many disasters. There would be tyrant governments. وَسَلَّتَ بَعْضَهُمْ عَلَىٰ بَعْضٍ وَلَمْ يَكُنْ لَهُمْ نَاصِرٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا فِي السَّمَاءِ. Then Allah will make bad people rule them. Then they would have no helper in on this earth nor in the sky.
I'm looking back throughout the years to breathe is hard and my eyes are choked with tears. Your face and hair are full of light. Now it will soon be time to go. I feel you feeling calm now. Did the angel let you know?
Oh Allah, please send your salutations to Muhammad and all Muhammad. Please give shifa to all people who are ill. Please give shifa to people who are ill in their body and in their soul. Oh Allah, please send your rahmah, your forgiveness to all who have passed away, especially brothers and sisters who were attending these majalis in this community and other communities. Our parents, our foreparents, our teachers, our ulama, our maraje, those who have passed away. Please let them be with Muhammad and Ali Muhammad right now. And please give long life and blessed life to the parents and to the teachers and maraje who are alive. Oh Allah, please make the last moment of our life the best moment of our life. Wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
My ummah, he will say. Rasulullah on that day, even though we've strayed from him and his way. My brothers, my sisters in Islam, let's struggle, work and pray. If we are to bring back the glory of his way. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin,
يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رايزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رايزك لتصي دليلتك once again
in the limelight.
In what Palestinian observers and advocates call a glaring example of settler colonialism in action, a video circulating on social media recently shows a Palestinian woman confronting an Israeli man who admits he's trying to steal her family's home in occupied East Al-Quds. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Brett Wilkins Ryder. This article is titled "An Israeli man trying to take over Palestinian home says, if I don't steal it, someone else will." Stay tuned for the details, please. In what Palestinian observers and advocates call a glaring example of settler colonialism in action, a video circulating on social media recently shows a Palestinian woman confronting an Israeli man who admits he is trying to steal her family's home in the occupied East Al-Quds. According to Al Jazeera, Palestinian activist Tamer Maalada recorded a footage of the exchange between Bona Al-Kurd and a man with a North American accent named Jacob, whom Al-Kurd knows because his family has already stolen half of her home. "Jacob, you know that this is not your house," Al-Kurd tells the man in her backyard, who replies, "What's the problem? Why are you yelling at me?" "I didn't do this," the man insists. "It's easy to yell at me, but I didn't do this." Al-Kurd then pleads, "You are stealing my house." Jacob replies, "And if I don't steal it, someone else is going to steal it." Al-Kurd then protests that no one is allowed to steal it. In what other words, if not apartheid, are we to describe the reality in Palestine? According to Al Jazeera, half of the Al-Kurd family home was seized by the Zionist regime settlers in 2009. Mona's twin brother Mohammad previously told the outlet that the family has been sharing the property with squatters with Brooklyn accents, in a situation he described as insufferable, intolerable, and terrible. "They're just sitting in our home, tormenting us, harassing us, doing everything they can to not only force us to leave the second half of our home, but also harassing our neighbors into leaving their homes as part of an effort to completely annihilate the presence of Palestinians from Al-Quds," Mohammed said. Al-Kurd's home is located in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Al-Quds, which has been illegally occupied by the Zionist regime forces since 1967, and where Zionist settlers have been seizing Palestinian homes with state support. Last March, a Zionist regime court in the occupied city ordered half a dozen families, including Al-Kurds, to leave their homes so that Jewish settler colonialists could take possession of them. Dozens of other Palestinian families in the neighborhood live under the constant threat of eviction. The inherently unjust system of Israeli regime's colonial courts is not considering questioning the illegal settlers' ownership and has already decided on the family's dispossession, a statement from the affected Palestinian family said, according to Al Jazeera. The video's publication follows an April 27th report from the U.S.-based group Human Rights Watch that accuses the Zionist regime of crimes against humanity, including apartheid and persecution. It also follows the publication of videos showing rampaging mobs of far-right Israelis attacking Palestinian people and property in East Al-Quds. The fake regime of Israel was founded largely through the theft of Palestinian land and the ethnic cleansing of more than 700,000 Arabs from their homes in 1948 and 1949. Over 400 Arab villages were destroyed or abandoned. Their residents, some of whom still hold the keys to their stolen homes, were never allowed to return, despite a United Nations resolution guaranteeing the right of return. The Zionist regime cabinet minister Moshe Dayan acknowledged in a 1969 speech that "We came to this country, Palestine, which was already populated by Arabs, and we are establishing a Jewish state here. Jewish villages were built in place of Arab villages. You do not even know the names of these Arab villages, and I do not blame you, because those geography books no longer exist. Not only do the books not exist, the Arab villages are not there either. There is not one place built in this country that did not have a former Arab population. Hundreds of thousands more Palestinians were ethnically cleansed from their homes during the Zionist regime seizure of the West Bank, Gaza, and East Al-Quds in 1967 Six-Day War.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
The month of Allah presents Ahkam, Islamic Commandments of Fasting by Hujjatul Islam Khakdaman.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Hello and welcome to our program. This is Month of Allah, and in this program I have the opportunity to talk about the specific Ahkam regarding the month of Ramadan. In this episode, I would like to talk about some of haram or makruh fasts that we can have. Some of the fasts that are either, you know, very recommended to avoid, not to have them, or the fasts that are haram, forbidden, totally, you know, prohibited by the God, by the Holy Prophet and Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them. And now, to count two of them, the Eidul Qurban is, for example, one of the days. Eidul Fitr is the other day that fasting is haram. Two more things to say, not special days, but special occasions that happen. The first one is about the wives. You know, recommended fasting is very good, and it is very pleasant. And, you know, when studying about recommended fasting, especially in month of Sha'ban or Rajab or any day of the year, it has a lot of benefits and virtues. But for women, there are some more things to know, let's say like this. Because for the women who are married, their husband, you know, they need to care more. Because when the woman is fasting, there are a couple of things that they cannot do, right? We talked about this before. What is here, especially about the marriage, is the intercourse, right? If you are fasting, you are a woman, you cannot have intercourse with your husband. But having an intercourse, you know, the chance and the possibility of having intercourse and the fact that you need to be ready for it any time your husband wants it is one of the rights, one of the things that is on your shoulder, right? As a woman, to offer any time your husband wants. And the fast that you have is a recommended one, right? It is not obligatory. If it was obligatory, if it was wajib, then the husband cannot say anything. The husband cannot say, I don't want you to fast. It is wajib. But if it's recommended, a woman cannot fast without the allowance, without the permission, without the consent of the man, of the husband. Because it is one of the rights for the husband. The husband can want, can require intercourse any time from the wife. And the wife should be all of the time ready. Since the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, has an account which is very famous and very important. The Holy Prophet says to the woman that you need to be ready and prepared for your husband to give them whatever they want in terms of having intercourse any time that they want it. Any time, even when you are on a horse. Now, this is a saying, this is like a metaphor. The Holy Prophet doesn't mean that on a horse you should have intercourse. No, on a horse is a metaphor for very difficult and unlikely situations. It is something to say to the woman to kind of look for it, to pay attention to it, that any time they should be ready to give their husbands whatever they want in terms of having intercourse and these inside marriage activities. In the religion language, we call this tamakkun, and it is wajib for the woman. Why do we pay attention so much to it? Why do we talk about it like an episode we just dedicated to it? Because not being ready and for having sexual intercourse with the husband, not being ready and not allowing that to do and to be happen is haram. Since it is haram, we need to pay a lot of attention to it, especially those days that the recommended fastings are going to come. So women, pay attention to it and you know, just prioritize. Make your husband happy and satisfied first, make him okay, and then he allows you. It's all right. You can have recommended fasting. Thank you so very much, and goodbye.
Aperture.
As humans, the earth is our home. It is the only home we have. The earth is where we live, breathe, eat, and raise the future generation. Our entire life support system is dependent on the well-being of our natural environment and all of the species living on this beautiful blue planet. But what have we done to it? How have we preserved it? I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Unfortunately, our planet is in grave danger. many species of animals and plants are nearing extinction. Our clean air and water supply is at risk, and more of our beautiful open spaces are disappearing as new buildings and factories are built. What is worse is that the Earth is getting warmer and warmer as we speak. This week's documentary explores the perilous state of our planet. Stay with us for the first part.
Issue
that tsunami warning.
Gives us a clear idea of what's happening.
The cloud is now moving south. It's harmless to people on the
ground. Covered with thousands of miles, why doesn't that energy dissipate?
The Earth isn't feeling well.
That is a
its fever has risen, and its situation is getting worse by the day.
Nowadays, we hear people saying the Earth's temperature is rising.
The average temperature of the Earth was about 15 degrees Celsius in the beginning of the 20th century. During the Ice Age, the average temperature of the Earth was only 5 degrees less. Take into consideration this 15 degrees and compare it to the 10 degree average during the Ice Age. Now, if this 15 degrees, God forbid, reaches 19 or 20 degrees, what age would you call that? The ebullient age? Naturally, the subsistence of life will end way before the ebullient age.
Of course, the Earth has other problems as well, but climate change or global warming is a major problem, which increases the frequency of droughts, storms, and other consequences and natural disasters that take place on the Earth's surface.
The existence of icebergs in the north and south poles cause reflection of solar energy, which is known as albedo. Without an ice cover, this energy will be absorbed by the Earth's surface and accelerate global warming, altering the average temperature on planet Earth. We can say the Earth has a fever. It may be 1 degree or 1 2/100 degrees.
There's a very simple formula. Q is heat energy, which is equal to the mass of substance multiplied by C, which is a specific heat capacity multiplied by delta T. A 2-degree delta T, for instance, is multiplied by a huge mass at a specific heat capacity, which sums up to what? A very large Q. And what does that all mean? It means that all these signals I'm giving you are alarming. And it means that I'm continuously moving from the green line into the orange and red lines and into the danger zone.
Greenhouse gases are gases that can trap wavelengths larger than 4 microns within themselves. These are wavelengths that are radiated to the Earth from the Sun, and when reflected from the surface of the Earth, elements become trapped within the wavelengths. They trap greenhouse gases and absorb heat, which leads to the gradual warming of the Earth.
تدریجاً افزایش دمیانگین دمای کره زمین.
Just like inside a greenhouse, as in the ones used for farming, when solar radiation penetrates into it, the trapped heat is not completely removed, and it causes the inside of the greenhouse to become warmer than the outside. Greenhouse gases play the same role in the Earth's atmosphere.
Greenhouse gases per se are very useful. The existence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, which we usually refer to as carbon dioxide, is very useful, because without these gases, the temperature of the Earth would fall to minus 19 degrees Celsius. Minus 19 degrees Celsius means a total freeze. It means no agricultural or farming product would be able to grow.
انجماد مطلق یعنی هیچ نوع رستنی هیچ نوع مواد غذایی اصلا امکان رویش نداره. طبیعتاً امکان بقای انسان روی کره زمین رو
obviously it wouldn't provide the requirements for human existence on the earth. The existence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and the partial trapping of energy reflections from the Earth have caused the Earth's temperature to rise to 15 degrees Celsius. In other words, greenhouse gases have caused a 34 degree temperature rise. This process has obviously created the ideal situation we have for all living creatures to thrive.
A forest is one factor responsible for absorbing greenhouse gases. It is necessary for soaking up greenhouse gases. Unfortunately, forests around the world are being brutally desecrated for their wood and their land. You can see many instances of deforestation around the world. Deforestation has taken place to enable farming, but also for building factories and cities. When these forests are destroyed, the global sources for absorbing greenhouse gases are weakened.
With the proliferation of greenhouse gases and the increase of human activities on the surface of the Earth, which has provided the growth and spread of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, the basis for absorbing and trapping thermal energy that is reflected from the surface of the Earth is further provided in the atmosphere.
The atmosphere's capacity for greenhouse gases is 2900 gigatons. And until now, in the year 2010, about 65% of its capacity has been emitted. So from 2010 until the year 2100, the atmosphere only has the capacity to handle another 35%.
And obviously the basis has been provided for the Earth's average temperature of 15 degrees to rise to 15.5, 15.7 or 15.9 degrees, and even to 16 degrees at times.
از این 1900 گیگاتون منتشر شده در کل جهان در
A large portion of the 1900 gigatons emitted into the atmosphere belongs to countries which have caused more emissions starting from the 1840s and 1850s. Developing countries with 81% of the world's population have only emitted 26% of these gases.
Therefore, we're facing a very serious humanitarian hazard, and we need to take serious measures to stop the emission of greenhouse gases.
Progress is being made, however. Beijing authorities are closing factories and outlawing burning coal for heating.
Naturally, a rise in the average temperature of the surface of the Earth from moderate levels can have bad consequences, and temperatures higher than that can pave the way for various disasters on the Earth's surface.
We're working in a totally unsustainable way. We do things to feel at ease, but we only have one planet Earth. We can't later immigrate and leave this planet. If we destroy it, where else can we go? This is it. And the destruction we're causing with technological development is enough to put our lives at risk now. As a human being, I'd ask, what sort of technological development have we accomplished? What sort of technology have we achieved? Or what have we done for human comfort that hasn't harmed us in any way? Give me one example.
The skyline is littered with factories, and toxic smoke pours into the air day and night. For those living here, it's a choice between pollution and
unemployment. The Environmental Protection Agency's emission standards for hazardous air pollutants from coal and oil-fired power plants. The court rejected state and industry challenges to rule designs
that clean up mercury, European Parliament said reducing supply in the CO2 trading market would boost prices.
What does it mean to live in a polluted place? It means that particles, say 5 microns, 2.5 microns and 1 micron increase. Carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide increase. Now it depends on the quality of the gasoline and the gas that you use. The sulfur and nitrogen derivatives, ozone and finally soot and particulates all scatter in the air and they eventually enter the body either through the nose or the mouth. So body cells that start from the nose, eyes and mouth and reach the depth of the lungs are all affected, and these substances enter the bloodstream through the respiratory system. It affects the brain. We become tired fast. We become impatient. We quickly lose our temper and verbally assault each other. There's no need for one to be ill. Those who are ill are at greater risk.
We see B2B, business to business. Just business to business. It's usually called B2B. This is a disaster. Even if it means death and costs us our lives, which is our most important index, we have a brain. We don't use it. The only thing we see in business is the money. Everything depends on how deep one's pockets are.
Development is a natural process in human growth which has existed for thousands of years. It's now been accelerated, becoming faster and stranger. But during this development process, some of us have become rich. Some are filling up their bank accounts and becoming wealthy.
It's interesting, though, that these same people, sometimes directly, but most times indirectly, have to somehow return this money.
The oil leaked for 87 days, the worst offshore spill in U.S. history. BP was later found to be grossly negligent for the explosion aboard the Deepwater Horizon platform. And today, it agreed to a settlement that will include a $5.5 billion fine for violations of the Clean Water Act, $7.1 billion to the U.S. government and five states to repair coastlines smeared by oil, $4.9 billion to settle economic claims by those five states, and up to $1 billion to 400 local governments. Louisiana, the most heavily damaged, gets almost $7 billion, the biggest share.
This is by no means chance and accident. Our experience in development over the past 100 or 200 years shows that technological advancement and city living have been the cause of this. Name any technology you like, or whatever has made human existence easier, and you'll find it's harmed the environment.
China has announced the successful containment of its worst ever reported oil spill, although much work remains to be done before an ongoing cleanup is complete. At a media briefing, the vice mayor of the northeastern coastal city of Dalian, where the spill occurred, said workers had used more than 40 kilometers of oil barriers and 65 tons of absorbent pads to stop the slick reaching international waters. Yet with oil remaining on beaches and in the water, he also acknowledged a full cleanup will be an arduous task.
Go back 160 years in time to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, the industrial age in the 1850s, to see an impact.
It's been about a century that we humans have opted for consumerism on the earth, and as we have moved forward in recent decades, consumer demand has risen.
Until a point, we lived along with the earth and the nature. From a point onwards, we just forgot about what the earth is, where it's come from, and where this kind of usage will lead us to. We just want everything. The high consumer demand that we're witnessing these days is just destroying the earth's natural resources.
But a leading scientist suggests the reasons for the drought may be even more worrying for Brazil in the long run. Has continued deforestation in the Amazon and in the Atlantic forest drastically altered the climate?
We created the packaging industry to be able to easily relocate food products and conserve them for longer periods, so we would be able to keep a packet of food or fruit juice for, say, 2 weeks without it being spoiled. What's been the outcome? Go take a look at the landfills to see what we've done to the earth by producing all this garbage, garbage that can't be recycled. It was done for our comfort, but it's also put our future in danger.
If we move back a few decades, there were a limited number of countries that were consumer-based and that used a lot of energy and products like the United States and in Europe. But these days, global consumption on Earth has sharply increased as countries in East Asia, especially China, have started boosting their consumption.
About 56% of these greenhouse gases are produced by fossil fuels.
Naturally, the rise in the use of fossil fuels is due to energy requirements of machines used for ever-expanding development projects. to boost the machine age, the industrial age. Due to this boosting process, the developed world has had to increase its use of different kinds of fossil fuels. This has paved the way for partial deforestation, which aims to provide the agricultural requirements to cover total food needs of a growing global population. This causes change to the optimal 15-degree world average temperature.
In the northeastern prefecture of Miyagi, and what you're looking at right now on the screen is in the city of Sendai.
A couple of feet of water, so they have to stand out there until they can manage to get the boat across and then take a big group of them into an entrance ramp of ice.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خداست. ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah.
I invite you to listen to a short part of Chapter 9 of the book Sirr-us-Salat, The Secret of Prayer by Imam Khomeini. The praying is the main gate of hearts and souls worshipping, and little by little, the God soldiers within the realm of one's essence watches praying and worshipping, and it will be a discovery of praising features and glory upon the heart, and achieves the first manifestation of Tawheed. Afterwards, the conduct's divine way will be opened for him, and he will be the deserve entering the real prayer by the help of Allah.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today we are with another saying of Imam Khomeini, in which he said, "The Quran is a book designed to produce true human beings. It is a book that covers all the stages in man's development." According to this saying, Quran is a complete book, and that is how Quran is. And the month of Ramadan is a chance in which we can benefit the most from the book of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Quran talks about the munafiqeen, and he says, don't become hypocrite. It talks about the fasiqeen. It says, don't become transgressors. Do not become transgressors. So what you need to become? You need to become a mu'min. There is always a door of tawbah, repentance, open for you. And Imam says that this book is a book that covers all the stages in man's development. But the point is, are we benefiting from this book the way we should? Because about Imam Khomeini, his close companions, they said he used to recite Quran 8 times in a day.
كم أهواك يا شهر الصيام أنا لن أنساك فأنت في قلبي دائما تمضي الأيام ودعائي كل عام ربي تقبلنا يا ربي بلغنا بلغنا رمضان
So in different times of a day, he used to recite, open the Quran and recite a couple of verses or maybe pages. And according to some other narrations that we have or the comments that we received from his companions or family members, they said that in the holy month of Ramadan, Imam used to finish the whole Quran in 3 days. Now, a person who is finishing the whole Quran in 3 days, while he knows the language and the way he stepped forward, the way he came forward in order to have the revolution and the way he was succeeded, it shows that yes, he got all his guidance from this book, which is the book of guidance, the book of Quran. He got this guidance from the Quran. He got this courage from the Quran, and he is succeeded because of the Quran. And that's why he is now advising us to go towards the Quran, to look into the Quran and to find the guidance from the Quran. But the condition is to be muttaqi before getting the guidance. The statements are clear, but those who are muttaqi, those who are pious, those who have fear of God will get the guidance and the admonition from the Quran. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Recently installed pizza making machine is pitting itself against masterful chefs in the Italian capital Rome. The tall red machine has become a head turner in the city, which is famous for its pizza, one of Italy's most iconic traditional dishes. The customers get to choose among 4 types of pizzas plus a drink. A few minutes after placing your order, you will receive the dish on a platter fresh out of the oven. But Italians say the pizza cannot compete with those made traditionally.
The true pizza is made from a wood oven. I wouldn't even take into consideration eating a pizza from a machine.
So far, the reception from people has been far from favorable. However, some say the final product can be acceptable considering its price or if you are in a hurry. As many countries accelerate their coronavirus vaccination programs, life is gradually getting back to normal. Now, residents of a nursing home in the Spanish capital, Madrid, finally get a chance to go out after months of isolation. Around 50 elderly residents and staff from 2 care homes went on an excursion to the Madrid Zoo after they were vaccinated against COVID-19. They visited some of the park's inhabitants, from pandas to elephants, while sitting on a miniature train. They hailed the idea, saying they were bored with staying at the nursing home with no visitors.
It's good to leave, to break the monotony of the nursing home, especially as we have been confined there for so long. It's nice to get outside, so I decided to go out and see the world.
The director of the care home believes the experience makes the residents forget about their pains. Around 43,000 seniors died of COVID-19 during the first wave of the pandemic in Spain. The elderly population was among the first group to receive coronavirus vaccines in the country. Now, looking for a cheaper and more sustainable alternative to traditional lawn mowers. Ship me may be the answer. Researchers at the University of California, Davis, have embarked on a project to test the effectiveness of sheep as new lawn mowers. The project includes 25 sheep of four different breeds. They are going to graze on a one-acre plot of pasture for 3 days. The process will be repeated after a month.
The sheep have been used for a couple of things. So they're as good as goats in reducing down the vegetation. So in areas where there is, it doesn't just have to be a lawn. If they're in their areas where there's overgrown and you've got sort of those higher fuel ladders, they can eat that down. But what they also do, so they can cut that out, but then they also can come around and after there's been a fire, they're really good at eating the weeds that come up initially, the weeds that we don't want, those invasive weeds.
Researchers believe that the initiative also has an environmental impact. With fewer mowers, there might be less emission. They also hope using sheep will help increase natural fertilization and nutrient levels.
Over the past few years, people have become more aware of the detrimental effect of littering to the environment. Bolivians have launched a nationwide campaign aimed at protecting the country's scenic spots and waterways from human waste. Hundreds of volunteers were seen cleaning up the Valley of the Souls near La Paz, which is famous for its unusual razor-sharp rock formations. The volunteers, aided by heavy machinery, managed to collect over 15 tons of plastic waste and construction rubble from the rocky canyon. Activist Carola says people needed to speak up more in defense of the nature, which is increasingly coming under threat.
It is incredible how we can find jewels like this painting amid all these piles of rubble and garbage, and we are surprised and ask, what is going on with nature? It is a tourist place where many people come. The Valley of the Souls is very special, and many people have gathered together here to be a voice for nature and to get it the care and respect it deserves.
Last month, the campaign also cleared the highland lake of Uru Uru in western Bolivia, which is said to be full of more plastic than water. Campaigners say they will continue their efforts until no place with garbage is left in the country. An exhibition in the Belgian province of Walloon-Brabant has put on display several objects belonging to French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte. A belt with the word Waterloo written on it, a flintlock pistol, Napoleon's shoe, bathtub, clothes, and several other objects are all displayed in the exhibition. Many of the items are brought from Napoleon's last residence on St. Helena Island. The curators say the exhibition aims to show Napoleon's daily life and the way he lived. Earlier this week, an auction was set up in France offering Napoleon's blood-stained cloth, estimated to be sold for $18,000. May 5th marks the 200th anniversary of Napoleon's death.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
People always try to find new ways to connect and support each other at the moment of crisis. A young Indian is one such example who is saving lives by providing free oxygen to coronavirus patients. 32-year-old Shanawaz Sheikh is a resident of India's commercial hub, Mumbai. He launched the campaign during the first wave of the pandemic when his friend's cousin died of COVID-19 on the way to hospital. Now popularly known as Oxygen Man, Shanawaz sold his car last June and used the money to buy oxygen cylinders for those in need. He and his team have now set up a control room to deliver oxygen to patients. They send the cylinder as soon as they receive a call from a COVID patient or a family.
Without oxygen, a patient can't live. They need it very badly, even in the ambulance on the way to hospital. If Shanawaz wasn't helping, patients would likely not even make it to hospitals. they would die on the way.
Shinawaz says his team helped nearly 5,000 people during the first wave of the pandemic last year and is planning to help as many as possible during the second wave. His initiative is earning him much praise on social media, with many calling Shinawaz and his team real heroes during the crisis.
Archaeologists have found a meaning for mysterious new findings in a cave in Mexico. They believe they are part of ancient Maya rituals. Around 1,200 years ago, some people imprinted their hands on the cave walls. The 137 prints are in two colors, black and red. Experts say the black ones represent death, while the red paintings are a reference to war or life. An analysis of their size also shows that the handprints were likely made by children as they entered puberty. The subterranean cavern, called Chichen Itza, is located nearly 10 meters below a tree which Mayans assume sacred. Little hotels for little bees. In Colombia, wooden structures are built for the insects to rest after a hard day. The Oboro Valley Metropolitan Authority has installed the hexagon-shaped rooms for bees of all shapes and sizes. Every day, volunteers clean the bamboo hotel with paintbrushes. Designers say the bee hotels are made to protect some species that are more vulnerable.
These little bees are supremely sensitive to poisons, and since they don't produce honey, no one speaks up for them. So we're coming to the rescue.
Designers say bees are losing their habitat all over the world, so the hotels could be a means of survival. Colombia has registered 550 varieties of bees within its borders. In Britain, a revolutionary idea might change many things in regard to maritime boarding operations, a jet suit. This is what the Royal Marines are testing in a variety of scenarios. Wearing the jet suit, each person can fly freely over the water and land on a moving ship. Its developer company, Gravity Industries, says the suit provides quick access to any part of a target vessel. Previously, British paramedics had tested the unique product for search and rescue operations. The suit can reach a speed of 51 kilometers and a height of over 3,600 meters. Now, the 200th death anniversary of French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte has brought a unique opportunity for private collectors to buy his DNA. The auction offers Napoleon's blood-stained cloth, which is estimated to be sold for $18,000. The collection will also include a lock of the French Emperor's hair, a pair of his stockings, a shirt with an embroidered letter N, and other items of clothing.
In my opinion, Napoleon was the first to want to create a Napoleon brand, even when he was alive. He created an image, a symbol, a look, with his hat worn in reverse. It was a very ordinary hat, an ordinary coat, but he was a very good communicator, and he created his image. So generation after generation, we kept this image of Napoleon, his hat, and this contributed to the myth. But it was Napoleon who wanted from the beginning to create an image, a look.
Nearly 360 objects will go under the hammer in the upcoming auction. Many of the items are brought back from Napoleon's last residence on St. Helena Island. Historians say his belongings have sparked the passion of collectors in France and other parts of the world. Several years ago, one of the French Emperor's signature bicorn hats was sold to a Korean food industry mogul for more than $2 million.
www.parstoday.com/en